Welcome to the Patrick Jones Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Jones, former hitting coach in the Baltimore Orioles organization, and now helping high school baseball players get recruited to play in college. In today's episode, my guest is Mike Zimmer. Mike is currently an assistant coach in the Texas Glory organization, and he also runs the biggest softball group on Facebook. It's called Coaching Softball, Tips, Drills, Travel Teams, and more. We'll put that link in the show notes if you want to join. It's free. There's over 100,000 members in this softball group. It's fantastic content. I'm in it, and I really enjoy being a part of it. In today's episode, we are focusing on travel softball, the do's and don'ts, how to save money as a parent, picking the right camps to go to, using social media as a recruiting tool, contacting coaches, tournaments, and how to not let FOMO, fear of missing out, get to you as a parent. For those coaches or parents who are listening to this podcast, if you're looking to evolve and get better and learn more about hitting and hitting development, check out my free weekly newsletter. It's called The Hitting Chronicle, where each Tuesday at 9 a.m., I send out a newsletter on ways you can improve the mental game, develop better mechanics, drills you can do in a cage, and anything else related to hitting development. So head to my website, patrickjonesbaseball.com, and sign up for my free newsletter, The Hitting Chronicle. So patrickjonesbaseball.com, sign up for my free newsletter, The Hitting Chronicle. Ladies and gentlemen, here is my episode with Mike Zimmer. We ready for war, never back down, give me some more. We came for the title. I appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Mike, when I say travel softball, just those two words, travel softball, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
That's actually a good question. I think more just softball and teams wanting to do it their own way and not having to be set a certain standard of rules by a league. That's what first comes in my mind.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is pretty cool about the softball world and the baseball world too, is it the fun of traveling, right? As a kid, I remember doing that myself as a kid, where you're traveling to different tournaments and things like that. It seems that it's taken on a life of its own. Just I've been talking with parents, some who have spent between $20,000 and $40,000 in one summer traveling around to all these tournaments. I know you coach your own daughter for, and she plays for the Texas Glory, which is a nationally known organization. But what would be a piece of advice that you would have for parents out there who are trying to just not spend thousands and thousands of dollars? What would be something you would recommend? Like, how would somebody save money, but their daughter also wants to play travel softball and potentially get a scholarship someday?
So I was just speaking about this the other day to somebody. So how I think it should go down, how I think travel ball should go, is I honestly don't think teams under probably first year 14s will start traveling a little bit, but anything earlier than that, I think we play too much. I think we jump into too many tournaments. We try to go. I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of getting sucked in and not that it's a bad thing, but like going and playing PGF at 10U, going and doing these big tournaments and spending all this money when it truly doesn't mean anything. And I honestly think we have the girls play way too much and not really learn the game or learn fundamentals, right? And I know some people do. I know there's exceptions to the rules, right? I've with my own daughter, we worked fundamentals. But as a holistic, especially parents who really don't know the game, they either got to send them to lessons or they got to send them somewhere else, because the team's playing so much, the team really can't address the fundamental game of softball and how it should be played. There's too many tournaments. There should be more friendlies. I think I know some people in California. I think they do it right. I think they play a tournament once a month, maybe at the younger ages, and do friendlies, right? So you can stop the game. You can explain what's going on. But here in Texas, that's where I am, right? We went out and started playing like crazy at too young of an age. Now, once you get to 14s, I think you need to be on the best 14U team you can possibly get on. And I think you need to be okay with competing. That's a big thing. Parents, you know, little Sally, she has to bat in the three hole, play shortstop and do this. Get on the best team you can play and go play the best competition you can play. So that's when I would say, hey, it starts to get a little real. First year 14s, get your feet wet. And then second year 14s, you're probably really, you know, getting into the pool. And then 16s, you're diving in.
What should somebody be looking for? Let's say they have a daughter getting ready to play first year 14. What should they be looking for in an organization, in a coach? Like, because I mean, there's so many teams out there now. And if, especially as you mentioned, there's parents who don't know necessarily a ton about the game of softball or the ins and outs of coaching or anything. So they can kind of be swayed one way or another. What would be some advice for them on how to pick a good organization or just a good team, good coach?
Yeah, that's hard, right? So you got the big organizations, and trying to figure out that they're big for a reason, right? They get invited to the big tournaments because they're good, and they're good because they've been around a while and they've learned a lot. There's some one-offs. There's some organizations that, you know, there's one, especially here in Texas. I think they have two teams and it's just one, and they've played for a long time and they're really, really good. But you have to try to get on a team that's getting to the big tournaments that has the college coaches at it. Now, I know it's hard to say, hey, look, is this team or not? But I would look to see, most organizations will say, hey, they have a national team. Are they? Start trying to research what the big tournaments are, and does the team that you're trying to join play those tournaments, or are they getting close to those tournaments? That's the big thing. And honestly, like I said, there's organizations and it's hard, right? Oh, hey, we're, and again, Glory has a bunch, Firecrackers, Bombers, they all have a bunch. I would really try to ask the questions like, hey, are you affiliated with them and we're just paying money to say, hey, we're this organization, or are we really getting the benefits of getting to those tournaments that are going to help my daughter? And then it's also, though, parents have to understand or have a self-reflective, is my daughter good enough to play at that level? And that's a big thing too, right? I mean, as parents, we struggle to say, hey, you know, my daughter, she might not be at that level. And that's okay too, right? You can work your way up. And then, like I said, try to find the best team that will fit that is going to that model, right? Are they going to try to push them to get in front of the coaches, or are we just in content? And it kind of goes into, for me, there's three style of teams, right? Especially here in Texas, there's your regional team, right? They'll stay within the city of San Antonio or Austin and maybe slide down to Houston very little, but they're very regional. Then it's your state level teams. Like, they'll go play all of Texas, but maybe jump into a tournament in Louisiana and kind of go there. And then there's your national, right? Like, that's the team that I coach, right? We're national. We try to go, you know, we qualified for the Alliance Championship. So you need to see, hey, is this team an Alliance team or is this a PGF team? And are they getting to that championship? Are they able to qualify or getting to that or trying to get to that as a goal? You know, we'll play the TFL Championship, Texas Fast Pitch League Championship. We'll play the Sparkler in the Power Pool. Is that team a team that goes, plays that tournament? IDT is another big one in Colorado at the same time. Are you going to play that tournament? The big ones, you know, then there's some on the East Coast as well, right? There's some, There's one in Clearwater, Florida. That's a really good one. There's one in Tennessee, Atlanta. So you got to see, hey, is this team going that direction? And can my kid play at that level? So
you mentioned earlier that there's a team out in California who does one tournament a month. Is that something that at the older levels that's realistic too? Or do you need to be on a team that needs, that's playing in a tournament and traveling every single weekend?
So once you get to, I think 16, you got to be at the tournaments at the colleges you're at. Right. And just try to follow. And so that's the thing. Are they being truthful tournament directors? I know there's some, and you've got to look and say, hey, is this, are these, those, you know, are they really, these schools really at that tournament? So no, we'll play throughout the summer. I think we're at 7 or 8 tournaments, and we're traveling across the country to, you know, be in front of the schools that our girls want to try to go to.
What do you think that the reason is when it comes to travel softball that parents have the FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. And so that's why they're traveling everywhere. They're spending all kinds of money. And it's, I mean, I've talked to legitimately, Mike, I have talked to dads who won't even watch the games on the road. They will stay in the hotel because they get so worked up. And I've never heard of some of this stuff in on the baseball side. So it's just, it's foreign to me. It's wild, but I've heard this multiple times about dads and just not able to control themselves during the game. Why is that?
You know, I don't know. That's actually, I have not heard of that. Now I've heard some dads get very adamant and very excited. And I just think as parents, we softball's a little crazier. It's a little more intense. Obviously I came from the baseball side, play mm-hmm. baseball. And yeah, softball parents are different, right? It's very fast paced, very competitive. And I think that's probably what maybe triggers them a little bit. And there's a lot of good girls. I mean, it's with the sport coming so fast. And I think, it probably gets the parents a little bit with, I also think that it is a little still smaller, right? So you'll see, I mean, we were at a tournament this fall and there were 6 or 7, probably about 7 top level college coaches in the stands, right? So can you as a parent handle that, right? When your daughter makes an error, can your kid handle that? And the thing of it is when you talk to the coaches, they don't care, right? Yeah. They don't care how they do. It's how they respond to the adversity, right? What type of kid are they? What type of person are they in the dugout? What type of teammate are they? You know, they're there to see, hey, can I get you to the level that I need you at for playing at my school? And but I just don't think parents really believe that, even if you tell them. It's hard.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas on ways to make travel softball more affordable going forward for kids?
I think
the only thing I've been able to think of is I just need to make a ton of money and then be able to do it that way. I mean, honestly, I've tried to think of other ways, and I think there's ways you can help, but I mean, like just from a scaling standpoint where you can help people across the country everywhere. That's my only idea I can come up with.
Yeah. It's honestly, I think as the game grows, right, which it's growing, I think it'll morph a little bit into to a baseball style, but right now, unfortunately, like it's so spread out so that you have to go chase a little bit of the talent, and so chasing the talent costs money. I think you're starting to see kind of when I first got in, right? I was watching, I mean, it was California, Texas, Florida, and that's kind of how it is with baseball too. But then you start seeing these other states starting to kind of come in, and now you're seeing, you know, Oklahoma, I mean, and getting in there, and Louisiana, and then Georgia and Tennessee, and then you're starting to see up into the East Coast, and the girls are getting better. And once you get that, right, you get the talent pools getting bigger and better in your area, then you're probably not going to have to travel as much. I mean, let's face it, California didn't have to travel for a long time because, I mean, look at the talent in Southern California. It's half hour you drove for 15 minutes and you're at the another organization. It's one of the best in the country and so forth and so on. And so they really didn't have to. Now as the game is growing and the girls are getting so much better at other states, it's getting a little bit easier to say, okay, hey, I don't have to go all the way across the country to play a team. I can play in the backyard. But you know, you still have the fear of missing out, right? Like you said earlier. So, oh, I saw, you know, little Sally's team playing over there in California. We need to go play over there in California. And it's like, did you really need to?
Yeah. It's maybe. Funny to hear you say that because you're right on the baseball side. It's not as necessary to travel, but people still do because of that exact reason. It's like, you don't need to go to Lake Point, Georgia every other weekend, but you feel the need to because you see every other team doing it. So it's, yeah, I don't know. That'll be, I guess, conversation down the road. Hopefully, as you said, hopefully as the game of softball expands, that's going to help it make it more affordable for kids and things of that nature. I've heard you say before, and I really liked your quote here. If you want college coaches to be interested in you, you need to be interested in them. And in reference to reaching out to them to introduce yourself, getting them to come to your games, how should kids take control of the recruiting process? Should it be the kids? Should it be the play or the coaches? Like, kind of take me through your own recruiting process advice for players and parents out there.
So I have to give credit where credit is due. Most of that comes from Miss Sherry Nadine from CSA. She is, we are part of the Nadine program, right? As far as Glory. And she is fabulous. And she's taught us so much and opened my eyes. And 2 years ago, I wouldn't have known any of this. So she is a phenomenal resource to, so if you have any questions, I'll tell you what I know and what I've learned from her. But she's been awesome. The biggest thing is getting out there and emailing the schools, right? Trying to get them to come to your games. Why should they come to your games? Who are you playing? Where are you going? And show them that you're interested, right? I mean, like, hey, you know, one email isn't going to do it. And it's proof, you know, she told us this. And I kind of believed it, but I kind of didn't. I'm like, really? Do they really read our emails? Again, a million emails. Do they really read our emails? And we got a college roll up to one of our games and said, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so from this college and I'm coming because one of your players emailed me. And I'm like, okay. And then it happened again. And then it happened again. So that's big, right? I know social media is growing like crazy. I will say you have to be careful on the social media side, right? You don't want to overexpose yourself, right? And that's a big thing I think a lot of these kids do. They overexpose. There's leave something for the imagination, right? Don't and put something out there on social media, you know, put in our swing, hey, I'm working out. Well, you should be working out. The coaches, I mean, you know what I mean? You should be hitting and you don't need to you're hitting, because the first thing as a coach, I see these all the time. I see them on and she was the first one to point it out to me. And now every time I see a swing, I go and I dissect the swing and I'm like, I don't like that swing, right? Don't give a college coach the opportunity to sit there and dissect your swing working out when now they're like, hey, they don't want to come see you. But I really haven't ever dissect a home run swing, right? So if you get a home run, you can put that up, but be smart, be targeted. Know the schools you can play at, right? Start paying attention to, I tell parents, start paying attention to where, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years ahead of you. Where are those girls going? Where did they go? Are you comparable, right? If I'm 5'2" and I see that, you know, Alabama doesn't have a girl on their roster under 5'7", probably shouldn't email them. Right. You know, if I throw 58 and I see on, you know, Oklahoma, they don't have a girl throwing slower than 63, probably shouldn't email, you know. So be a little due diligence, be a little, you know, smart with what you're emailing, but get out there, email them, get some skills videos. I'm good with skill video. Get a skill video out there so they can see the good things that you have, what you got. And just be a little bit smarter on social media. Don't tag the coaches like crazy, right? That's a big thing. Like,
yeah. What do you think of, what do you think about tagging the coaches?
I'm against it, right? That's like, hey, look at me. Hey, look at me. Hey, look at me. Hey, look at me. It's just an overload. It's too much. It needs to be. I think if they're truly interested, they will, you know, you send out emails, right? Send out emails, say you're interested, but you don't need to like constantly peg.
Yeah.
They're getting overloaded and it's almost spam. And at that point, you know, do you want to continue with, you know, that person spamming you or not? I would say, if it's at the higher levels, I would say probably not. Don't, you know, they get millions, you know? Yeah.
I think that was some great advice though you gave right before that when you talked about putting enough out there to get them interested, but not giving away everything. I think that's huge, right? And it's kind of just marketing. You're marketing yourself because you're not going to get an offer just off of Twitter or some video you posted. You're just solely trying to get them to come watch you play a game.
Right. Yeah. And that was, like I said, that was something Sherry brought up, you know, cause I'm not going to lie, 10s and 12s, I was out there. Look at my little, you know, Sally and watch her swing and this and that. And then I'm like, she said, well, hey, what are you doing? What's this? And I self-reflected and I realized, I'm like, you're right. It's not, doesn't need, they want to know, or they expect you to be working out, right? You don't need to tell them. Yeah. They expect you to be doing these things, but then don't overexpose yourself. It's bad in my opinion.
Okay, Mike. So I know that you're an assistant coach, Texas Glory, first year 16. You have a daughter on the team too. There's a lot of parents out there who are coaching their kids. Maybe, you know, their kids are playing for their parents. I've seen it work both ways. I've seen it work well, and I've seen it work not so well. So you're in the heat of it right now. So what can you give us? What has worked? What doesn't work? What advice would you give somebody in a similar situation where even if they're at a lower level, their kids on their team, they're one of the coaches, how should they go about that?
Yeah, that was real hard, right? Unfortunately, I coached baseball. My son got out front of it, right? I was very much the dad who did not want to say, oh, I'm daddy ball, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was harder on him than any other player. And then it wasn't fair. And it took me reading a few books. Inside Out Coaching was a great book. Put a lot of reflection on what I was doing. And so then with my daughter, I pulled back a little bit, right? And just treated her, and it's really hard. It took me a while, treated her just like another player. You know, everybody says, oh, hey, daddy ball, daddy ball, daddy ball. But look, if you really look at the big organizations, right? Look at Bombers. Scott Smith was a dad. Look at Rico. Rico was a dad, right? Let's look at Crone Angels. He was a dad. You know, so every big organization started with a dad. So I take offense a little bit to the whole daddy ball thing and like, oh, hey, we want to go play for this team because there's no dads. Well, but the organization was started for dad stepping up, trying to teach their daughter, trying to learn. And they just fell in love with the game and continue to do it. Now, you know, some of them got kids coming up through and are coaching teams or running organizations. And I think it's great. But you have to have that tip. I mean, we've all seen the teams where the dad's like, oh, hey, you know, daughter's betting in the three hole playing shortstop. I mean, they cheer the loudest when she's up to bat or, you know, he's up to bat. And you as a parent on that team need to reflect, hey, is this something where it's good for my daughter or not? And then as far as the dads, they just, if you treat them all the same, if you do just as much for everybody. It'll be seen. It'll be seen. So I'm big on dad stepping up and coaching for the right reasons.
Yeah. Or moms too, right? I mean, I've seen mom.
Yes, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, moms too. Yeah. I think that here's the thing. I've coached travel before, travel baseball, and it is very important, and you have to have parents who coach because you're basically losing money by doing it. I mean, if we're being honest. And so there's not very many young people who don't have kids who can afford to be able to spend that amount of time and not make any money and pretty much lose money doing it. So it's so crucial in an organization to have really good parents do step up. And I've seen it done the right way. And I think a big part of it, Mike, is just it's the parent, right? If you have a parent who is all about only about their kid and only about coaching their kid and just they don't care about anybody else, it's going to be an issue. But I've seen it done the right way where I've seen parents who genuinely care about all the kids on the team. And I've seen it work amazing. So it definitely can work. There's no doubt about that. Now, my next question for you, because I've heard this before too, and I don't have any kids, so I'm just an outsider just from what I've seen. But I have heard of parent or of coaches who have had kids on the team and they won't coach their kid. They'll have one of the other coaches coach their kid. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, I know some people have done that. We've kind of done that a little bit too sometimes. It's, you know, there's just times where you get a little too close, right? As a coach slash parent, you know, you're obviously parent first and you get a little too close. And sometimes you just need to step back and let another coach kind of just get in there and talk to the kid. Cause it's hard for them as well, right? They're coming up and it's dad coach relationship. So, you know, we're expecting the kid to sit there or parent, you know, parent kid relationship, right? We're expecting them to automatically just be okay with it. And they're not, you know, so it's hard for them. So sometimes they would just be, it would be hard for them as well. So sometimes they don't respect it as much because it's coming from somebody, you know, a parent, right? Like there's all the times you see lessons. Yeah, I take the kid, you know, the lessons because I tell them the same thing. They don't listen, but I, you know, you go to a lesson with, you know, Coach Smith over there and they listen to every word. And it's like, wait a sec, why? I'm telling you the same thing, but, so yeah, I have seen it that way and I've seen it work that way. And then I've seen it work where they're able to coach, both ways. So it depends on the coach. It depends on the player and just how they react and how everything goes. It's been hard. I can just tell you with my kids, sometimes, separating the two. And then there's times when I can recognize that, or they've told me now as they've gotten older, you know, like, hey, you know, need to step back a little bit. And, okay, I'll step back a little bit, and then we'll get it fixed. And but it's gone pretty good for me.
Appreciate you sharing that. I know it's, you know, obviously close to home for you, but that's good stuff, and I know that's going to help out a lot of people who are listening. I want to talk a little about some development stuff now in terms of just player development. Now you're coaching. I've been working with some softball players and I've been in the softball world now for about a year, I would say. I've had coaches on and a lot more coaches on recently, so I'm still constantly learning more and more about it. One of the things that I do hear from college coaches is that I don't know why this is, but I do hear that developing arm strength is something that they hear that they don't see a ton of emphasis on. From a position player standpoint, more than just a pitching standpoint. Why do you think that is? And in your opinion, has that been true for you too?
Oh yeah, 100%. I even actually think baseball here in my area is the same way. Mm-hmm. We don't, to be honest, I don't think a lot of people know how to teach throwing. Right. You just, you know, back in my day, you know, you could just either throw or you couldn't throw. Right. It was just, that was just it. That kid had a good arm. It was just God given and nobody taught it. or they, you know, they'll fix a little bit here, right? You know, step with right foot, right? But we still do a lot of the old stuff, and that's just, I think a lot of it is, and again, the game's still transitioning, but old school mentality. And I like that there's some new people coming in and they're learning and trying to teach. And I think people will start adopting that. But yeah, 100%. I think arm care is not, it's very much lacking, and it shouldn't be. It should be on the forefront. We should be teaching at a very young age, you know, proper mechanics and proper stretching and all the drills, working them through. And, you know, but then there's different philosophies on that side as well. And I have my ideas.
What are your ideas?
So I'm big on throwing a lot. I'm big on throwing. I want them throwing almost every day. I'm not, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, like, hey, shut down. I'm not into shutting down. Now I'm not saying we got to go throw 100% every time, but playing catch, getting the arm loose, keeping the blood flowing, as much as you possibly can, I feel will just strengthen the arm, more, you know, as opposed to the constant rest, the constant, just, not constant rest, but having a rest period, shutting down. Even with travel softball, right? You're constantly going. So there's not a lot of rest, but, I honestly think that's probably a little bit for the better. But I'm big on bands and the shoulder tube and that stuff that I've had my own daughter doing for years. And, you know, who knows? Who knows if that made her arm? She got a pretty good arm. Don't know if that's contributed to or helped or what. But, yeah, I think learning throwing at a young age needs to be all the way across the board.
Do you see a lot of players long tossing?
I don't know. I mean, our team does. Yeah. I mean, but our team does. I would probably say no, right? I think another reason why we don't have throwing is because we have such a short time with our practices, right? Our practice is an hour and a half. Well, if you threw for 15 to 20 minutes or 30 minutes and got a good warm up and everything, well, that just took up, you know, a quarter of your practice. Are you okay with that? Right. And that's a big thing is, hey, structuring practices to include a good comprehensive warm up and throwing routine. Yeah, it should be in that, but that all leads right to practicing twice a week for 2 hours, but then we go play a tournament. We sit there for 16 hours at a tournament on a weekend when, man, if we would have taken away that tournament, we just even practice 8 hours on a weekend, we'd be so much better for it. And that's what I think we need to start doing as a whole in fast pitch. You know, will it happen? Probably not, but it should.
And just being honest, right, Mike?
Right.
What about on the hitting side? What are you seeing? What are you seeing on the hitting side? What should hitters be working on from the time that they're, you know, just starting to play softball up until, hey, things start getting real and college coaches are starting to come watch?
Yeah, I think hitting such a volatile subject.
Like politics. I mean, you're either loved or hated.
It's so I love just learning hitting and just listening and everything else like that. And I have an idea of like where I'm at with my hitting and the swings that I like. But oh my gosh, I mean, hitting Twitter is just crazy. I think you just gotta kind of just do some research, really look, don't listen, look, right? Mm. Watch video of hitters. Don't listen to the person. Don't even listen to the hitter, right? Because what they're saying and what they're doing a lot of times, in my opinion, is two different things. Do what they do. Don't do what they say. That's my biggest takeaway from all of hitting Twitter, all of that. And just even me messing and getting in the cage, right? I have a pitching machine here, and I did everything that I tell my kids to do and listen. And there's times where feel looks different. It just looks different, right? So I feel like I'm doing something, but I'm not doing it. And so I think, and I what's funny is I had this conversation with my son just recently. It's like back in my day, we used to watch baseball way more than they watch baseball now, right? And I would mimic every batter. So I think I was doing the correct swings just by purely mimicking who I wanted to hit like. Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore. So that's not taught, right? It's we got to go to a batting instructor, and our batting instructor says to do this, but we're not mirroring the big hitters anymore. And I think that's kind of what is, you know, changed as far as hitting, as far as kids being able to figure it out on their own. So everybody's at a hitting instructor, and you're going off of what they're telling you. And I think as a parent, you need to see, does your swing or does your daughter's swing mirror who you're trying to see somebody who's successful? That would be my most PC advice.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I was just reading, I always reread Ted Williams' book. And one of the things he talks about is try different stances, try different bats, try different grips, imitate other players that you see. Exactly what you're talking about, Mike, where it's you got to be able to that's the only way you know what kind of ice cream you like, right? You tried a lot of different flavors and then you found one you really liked and you stick with it. So it's the same concept of just continuing to experiment and evolve. I know. For me online, I've tried to gear my content as of what more lately anyway into more of the mental side. I get yelled at a lot less, and I think it's probably more impactful because, quite honestly, I get kind of bored talking about mechanics all the time. I think the human body works the way it works, and I mean, I don't know, that's just my own take on it. From a mental side, what are some ways that you have found that have helped some of the girls that you've coached over the years?
So a big thing that I've always tried to stress is knowing the game, knowing the pitcher, look at the patterns, look what they're doing, look what they're trying to do to you. Be self-aware. What are you, right? Are you a 5'10" girl that's massive? What are they going to try to throw to you? What are they going to go to a slapper? What are they going to do to you? So understanding the game, in my opinion, is going to give you a little bit more confidence, right? Understanding what they're trying to do to you. And then, you know, we as a team, and it slides into hitting, we're big on culture and just positive energy, right? So we're big. We did the energy bus part where I'll throw those keywords in there. So just having a good positive outlook, along with understanding the game, has kind of gone with our mental approach, right? And then same thing too, like, again, going back to knowing the game, what are we trying to do in this situation, right? We have you know, girls in certain positions, or we're trying to, you know, put the ball behind the runner, put the ball on the ground, put the ball wherever we need to do for that situation. So that's kind of where we're at with our mental hitting. And then there's other stuff we truly haven't really got into, just because it's so hard to have, you know, like I said, we don't have much time to practice. So another one I think I would try to do for the mental side is just seeing, hey, where the pitch is, right? What's being thrown, try to pick up on just spin of the ball, and just kind of seeing that a little bit, I think that might help out as well.
What about helping them just in terms of dealing with failure? Like, all these players, they struggle, right? And that's the one thing that always kills me about hitting. You talked about being private instructors and things like that and I work with players too, but I'm not dumb in the sense that these guys or girls are going to fail a lot. Yep. And so why wouldn't we plan for it? Why wouldn't you have a plan in place for when you start to struggle? this is what you're going to do, or this is what you're not going to do, because it's coming.
Yep. Yeah. So that was the thing too, right? With our culture, it's okay to fail. I mean, we've made it clear. If you're going, and you know, another one that kind of goes through glory is fail fast, right? Mm. If you're going 100%, we tell our girls all the time, if you're going 100%, if you're giving us your all, if you're trying your best and you fail, we won't get mad at you. There's no reason to get mad at you. You did nothing wrong. This game is not a, you'll hear some people say game of failure, stuff like that. It's just the game is hard, right? And so we allow failure to happen, that type of failure, right? You know, mental errors, you checked in, stuff like that will probably get on you. But physical errors and swinging a bat is physical. We just try to create a safe space as far as like, hey, look, you know, are we going to get flustered? Are we going to show, you know, a little motion? Sure. But for the most part, we've tried to keep it as safe as possible that, you know, do you think they really want to strike out? Do you think they want to roll over to ground out to third baseman? And I mean, no, they don't. And so why am I now as a coach going to go, you know, rip on them even more when they're already probably, you know, hurting inside? We're just going to, hey, if you gave us your all, that's all we can ask for.
Yeah. And after they do ground out or strike out or whatnot, a lot of times their first reaction is to look at you and see what your reaction is. And that's what's going to, you know, dictate what they do next. But I agree. I think the mental side is 100%. I mean, it needs to constantly be worked on and be an emphasis for coaches. Last thing I want to talk to you about, Mike, is, you know, you have built like the biggest social media, I would say, group for softball out there on Facebook. It's called Coaching Softball Tips, Drills, Travel Teams, and More. We'll put the link in the show notes, but over 100,000 people are a part of this group. I mean, I'm sure you've never in a million years thought it would be this big. I mean, it's crazy, but it's awesome too. I mean, take me through what was your vision when you first started this group on Facebook?
So there was a baseball one, almost identical to the name. It was just Coaching Baseball. And there would be softball questions on there. And you know, so some people would answer. And there wasn't a space for softball. So I was like, all right, well, there's a need for it. There's people on Facebook, they're asking questions. They have a daughter and a son, or a son and a daughter, and they're asking questions. And well, let's start it up. And so I started it up, invited, you know, all of my softball friends, and kind of said, hey, spread the word. And, you know, first year, maybe we got, I don't know, 150, maybe 200. And then it kind of got up next year, got up into maybe a couple thousand. And then I don't even know what year we're in now, but it was like, it went up to like 25,000. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then within probably during COVID is when we blew up. I didn't think we'd ever hit 100,000 in a million years. But yeah, we did. And there's a lot of good content. There's a lot of smart people out there. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of spam, which I'm trying to fix and clean up. But yeah, there's a lot of good content, and it's been great. It's been fun. And it's kind of just been, I just want to give back to the game. I don't take anything from it. You know, I've met some people, yes, they get some discounts, stuff like that, but everybody gets those same discounts. I want everybody to get everything that I get. And I want nothing from it other than to just give back to the game. That's been awesome to me.
Yeah. That's huge, man. I commend you for doing that. I think it also shows that you stuck with it. I mean, you didn't just get to growing this thing overnight. You started it for the right reason. And because, you know, you were more of a missionary than anything, you just stuck with it, and it continued to grow and grow and grow. And now, I mean, it's impacting, I can't even imagine how many players on it because of the coaches who were on it and the parents who were on it and everything. So it's really cool. I mean, what kind of content would you in your dream scenario, like what exactly would you want to, you log on to Facebook today, what exactly would you want to see on that page?
So I, you know, I've kind of gone different routes, right? That's a good question. So I do want tips, drills. I want everybody to have a voice as far as that type of stuff. I mean, if I had the time, I'd probably even try to put some content together. We were lucky enough. A few people have come through to put really good content on there. Like Wasserman was on there for a little bit, and then, you know, he blew up, so you don't need us. And then Coach Dan Blewett's on there a little bit, and then Meg Rim is on there. So I like the drills. I think that's great. Just overall the game, right? Just seeing the game. I like, you know, I know sometimes people don't like it. I like seeing the photos of the girls having fun and being at these tournaments sometimes, and just all the other different content. I like to see, to be honest, all of it, just softball. Like, it's funny, is I could go watch a dang game out there at the Little League and just like watching the game. It's a great game. And so anything softball, I'm a fan of. And so I try to steer it, you know, what people want. And sometimes, you know, it gets a little off centered, right? I just put in a new rule about trying to cut down on the tryouts and everything else like that, because it's such a global group. But I think kind of trying to keep it, answer questions, let everybody try to get the best they can, save as much money as they can, and get the game bigger. That's all I want for it.
Awesome. Well, appreciate it, Mike. And thanks again for coming on the podcast today. Looking forward to releasing this. And again, man, appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.